Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the cause of disease when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. We've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if your plumber said that? What if your plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or his own steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Well, listen to James Nielsen. Now, Nielsen is a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about these young budding lawyers. He said, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." He said, "It's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real, honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in the courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court." Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Call us direct, or you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Do it right now before you forget. All right, what causes disease? Allopathic medical doctors are at a loss to tell you what causes disease, but not quite all diseases, mainly cancer and heart attack and stroke. We actually know, and medical doctors can tell you what causes scurvy. It's a vitamin C deficiency. And so when we look at scurvy, we don't say, well, we don't know what causes scurvy, and that's because we know it's a nutritional deficiency. But scurvy isn't the only guy, you know, that we can identify. Pellagra, beriberi, scurvy, iodine deficiency, dry eyes. There are a number of diseases, a number of ailments that afflict mankind that we can trace directly to the source, to the cause. What causes disease? Well, in the case of scurvy, it's vitamin C deficiency. In the case of iodine deficiency, you get a lump in your throat. We call it a goiter. And there's names, there's labels that we hang on these various symptoms. You come into the doctor, you know, and you say, well, I've got... He wants to know, well, where does it hurt? And so, you know, if it's your thumb that hurts, you know, then he doesn't get concerned about your appendix. But if you've got this pain, you know, in your stomach or in your groin down here, you know, he says, oh, my God, maybe that's an appendicitis. And so then he looks at your appendix. You know, he feels, he pokes, he probes a little bit, and he develops some pain there. And he says, oh, my God, you've got an appendicitis. And he's got a cure for that. He cut it out. If he determines that you've got gallstones, we'll cut out your gallbladder. If he determines that you got a lump in your breast, we'll cut off your breast. If he determines that you've got cancer in your colon, we'll give you a colostomy. We'll cut your colon out, and we'll put a bag on the side of you, and you can go to the bathroom number two, right through the side of the right to the side of your stomach. There's a cure, there's a treatment, you know, there's recommendations that you get for these various diseases. Now there's a thing here called the desk reference, the Merck desk reference, and it's got all these diseases listed in there. And unbeknownst to most of us, these diseases are copyrighted and trademarked, you know, they're like Coca-Cola is copyrighted and trademarked. Well, cancer is copyrighted and trademarked too, did you know that? Now, there's a common disease that is mentioned in the Bible over here called leprosy, and that's called a generic name. And you can't copyright these generic names. And so in order for medical science to make money off of treating diseases, they copyright or patent them. And then they own it. Say it's a trade name. And then they own that. And then if they catch you out there using the name, you know, like I'm curing cancer, you know, I've got the cause of cancer. See, you got to be careful how you use that word cancer, because, you know, it's like Coca-Cola. You got to be careful about how you use the name Coca-Cola, because it belongs to somebody. It's somebody's property. And that's why people get into trouble when they go out here curing cancer. Now, in the Bible, it's kind of a generic name. You know, it's the botch of Egypt. You know, people had cancer back in olden days, but they didn't call it cancer. They called it the botch of Egypt. So, you know, you're looking through the Bible and you'll see these names like leprosy. You know, it's kind of an odd name, you know, leprosy. Is it somebody going to leap upon you? You know, this disease leaps upon you. It leapt past tense, leapt upon you. Well, today they call it Hansen's disease. So you go to the doctor and he says, oh, you've got Hansen's disease. And you say, oh, thank God for Bill Hansen. You know, he discovered this disease. Hell, it's been around for thousands of years. Diabetes, you know, they dig up these mummies, you know, from over in Egypt, you know, and around the world, for that matter. And then they'll run them through a, you know, x-ray machine, or they'll do a CAT scan or something, you know, and they dissect them and they look through them, you know, and then they say, oh my, look at this guy. He had osteoporosis. Look at this one. He's got diabetes. Look at this one. He's got dental caries over here. And down in South America, there's some real surprises down there. They've got skeletons, you know, they'll dig up a skull. And it's got a hole in the brain, you know, up in the top of the skull. And it's healed over. So somebody drilled the hole through this guy's head, his skull, operated on his brain. We don't know what went on in there. Of course, the brain's long gone, but what disease he had, something like that. But because it healed over, the operation was obviously, you know, we don't know if it cured the guy or not, but the operation was a success. They drilled through his skull while the guy was alive, got into his brain, and then the thing heals over. And so you got to admit, you know, hell, they had brain surgery going on, you know, hundreds and thousands of years ago. So medicine's been around for a long time, and that's because mankind has been hurting for a long time. You You know, we've had diseases for a long time. You know, you can go down to backwoods countries, you know, like New Guinea or Borneo, you know, and in the Philippines, you know, out in the mountains someplace, and you find these pretty primitive people. And you find two things. You find primitive people who are suffering from common diseases. And you find primitive people who don't have any disease and live to be 110 years old. And you go to Africa, you find primitive people, and they die young. And you go up there to the Himalaya Mountains, and you find the Hunza people, and they live to be 100. Not all of them, you know, of course, but a lot of them, you know, a high percentage of them do. And so it piques the curiosity of medical science here in the West because, you know, we know everything. I mean, if there isn't anything we don't know, it ain't worth knowing. And so every once in a while we run across these medical anomalies and we're dumbfounded. See, we just discovered brain surgery here in the 20th century. Prior to 1900, operating on somebody's head, you know, cutting a hole into their brain, you know, is unheard of. And so here's some anthropologist or archaeologist, he's digging around, you know, in some old city, digs up some skeletons, and they find they had brain surgery going on down here among the Aztecs and the Mayans, you know, or the Mayans, you know. And so they kind of shake their heads and go, God, we just don't know what to say about that. Now, a couple weeks ago, I did a story here for you on vitamin B17. And there's this medical doctor down in, over in California. I guess he's up around Berkeley, California. And he was having a lot of problems here with the AMA. He was trying to use a vitamin called vitamin B17. It's amygdalin. It's a peach pits is what it is. And it was discovered back in 1950 by a medical doctor. So I'm not trying to slight you medical doctors out there. Some of the most significant gains in medical science have been made by allopathic medical doctors. There's no two ways about it. There's a story about a guy by the name of Semmelweis, I believe is the way you pronounce his name. S-E-M-M-E-L-W-E-I-S. Ignaz Semmelweis. He was a medical doctor. An old-timey medical doctor going way back into the mid 19th century. And Ignaz Philipp Semmelweis was born July 1st, 1818. He died August 13th, 1865. And he was a Hungarian. He was a physician called the Savior of Mothers, who discovered by 1847 that the incidence of puerperal fever, P-U-E-R-P-E-R-A-L, puerperal fever, could be drastically cut by the use of hand-washing standards in obstetrical clinics. Puerperal fever, or child bed fever, was common in mid-19th century hospitals, and it was often fatal, with mortality at 10 to 35%. Semmelweis postulated the theory of washing with chlorinated lime solutions in 1847 as head of the Vienna General Hospital's first obstetrical clinic, where doctor wards had three times the mortality of midwife wards. Midwife. That's where women have their babies at home. You know, they just drop them, you know, over here in the bedroom. Or you'll see this mentioned also in Exodus chapter 1, that, you know, that these ladies are called midwives. And midwives are women, typically, not have to be, but typically, that are pretty skilled at childbirth. My grandmother had seven babies, and she was a pretty skilled midwife. You know, she, after a woman's had a couple, three babies, you know, then they can kind of tell the younger ones coming up, you know, well, let me tell you how this works. I've often wondered why you women want to go to a pediatrician, some man that's never had a baby. I don't know. I'm an old-timey farmer over here, you know. If I wanted to learn how to milk a cow, I'd go to some old guy, you know, who was milking by hand. That's what I'd do. In fact, that's what I did when I learned to milk. I was about 15 years old, and this little Portuguese guy's name was Frank Roach, and he was still stripping cows. And so that was my job. I started milking by hand. And pretty soon I was milking about 140 cows a day by hand, stripping them, not milking them out totally, but stripping them. You know. And so I learned how to milk years ago, and you know, I bet you the average milker today probably couldn't milk a cow without a milking machine. Well, anyway, this guy Simulweis over here, he's a medical doctor. He's working in the hospital, and he's looking at this, and he says, "Oh my God, look at the number of people who are dying here in the hospital. This is called childbed fever." And so he puts two and two together, and he says, "Doctors are over here doing an autopsy, cutting open dead bodies. Then they go over here to this woman who's just had a baby or who's about to have a baby, and they start touching her, you know, all over. And pretty soon, this woman develops this fever, and she dies from it, or something on that order." And so he took a look at the midwives over here. Now, they're not touching dead bodies. They're just coming in here, and they're touching these women. And he notices that that these women aren't dying. And he starts to think to himself. He says, the midwives over here in their ward, they're not having nearly the death rate that the medical doctors are having. And so he's watching, he's thinking about that, and pretty soon he comes to the conclusion. He says, I think I can put two and two together. I think I can connect these dots. They're over here working on these cadavers, these dead bodies, and autopsying them. And then they come over here and they work on these women over here, and these women develop this. Now, they hadn't discovered the germ theory yet. Louis Pasteur hadn't come along, you know, with a microscope and can come up with these germs and this germ theory. And so he says there's some kind of an agent here, particles of some kind, that are causing this disease. And he said, by washing your hands. And so he comes up with this disinfectant, you know. And he washes his hands, and he's the head of the hospital, and so he institutes this. Now, the medical profession just fought this guy tooth and toenail. In fact, I've read other stories about him, and they finally, they disbarred him, you know, they threw him out, and he ended up in a mental institution, and he finally died there. He died fairly young. He died in 1851, similarly, in 1865 is when he died. Born 1820, 30, 40, 50, 60, 47. 47. So the guy's 47 years old and he dies in a mental hospital. Now we saw when this doctor up in Berkeley discovered vitamin B17, they prosecuted him. They tried to put him in prison. And it's a very common scenario. The medical doctors are very, very hostile toward any other medical practice. So the medical doctors, they don't like chiropractors, they don't like naturopaths, they don't like herbalists, they don't like nutritionists, they don't like medical scientists, and anybody that messes with the medical profession is in danger of going to jail. And many of them have. And I picked out a book here the other day. It's Dr. Schultz, S-C-H-U-L-Z-E-S, no T, just S-C-H-U-L-Z-E-S. And Dr. Schultz, now he calls himself a doctor. I don't know why he does that. Just Richard Schultz would be fine by me, but I guess it's marketing. You know, it's marketing. If you can put DR in front of your name, I remember a guy one time, he says, "Hey, Gordon, I can get you a doctorate. You know, would you like to be called Dr. Gordon? It'd give you a lot of pizzazz, see?" And I thought, you know, I wasn't born Dr. Gordon. And so I turned him down, and I'm just kind of plain old George, you know, and I just kind of used to that. Never bothered me not being a doctor and all. But a lot of people, they like that. And so they run around, they like to hang a DR in front of their name over there and makes them, you know, makes it look like you're pretty smart. Well, the medical profession did not take Simulweis seriously, and for another 100 years they didn't wash their hands, and so God knows how many of you ladies out there died in childbirth from doctors that wouldn't listen to this guy who documented and showed and wrote papers and said, here's what's causing the problem over here. The same thing is true with this vitamin B17, you know. They've outlawed it here in the United States. God knows how many people are dying from vitamin B17 deficiency. Maybe in 100 years they'll wake up to that fact and say, well, you know, begrudgingly, of course, they'll say, well, maybe this B17 does have a place. And because that's what happened with vitamin C. See, years ago, the British, they're the ones that discovered this, they really didn't know what the hell vitamin C was either. But anyway, they'd have a ship, and they'd come upon a ship, you know, out in the ocean, and they'd board the ship, and everybody on board is dead. Dead bodies everywhere. The whole crew is dead on board the ship. And so they'd look around and they'd say, well, gosh, they didn't appear to be taken over by pirates or anything. And so they didn't know what the hell was going on, see. So they'd look at these guys and they'd say, well, they've got scurvy. It's a scurvied crew, they'd say. And this crew, they used to eat a lot of salt pork, you know, and meat and stuff, but they didn't have vitamin C. They didn't have tomatoes and peppers. And so one day somebody woke up, I don't know, and they said, well, these ships that are going down, you know, south, and they eat limes and they eat oranges and stuff, they don't get scurvy. But when they're going across the ocean to America or they're going some other place, they get scurvy. And so somebody, you know, is putting two and two together, and they said, when you eat limes, you don't get scurvy. So the British Navy, they start putting limes on board their ships, and then every day they'd give some the sailor, you know, a lime, say, go eat this. And so the limey would eat the lime, and then he didn't get scurvy. And so they came to a conclusion that these limes prevent scurvy. They didn't know why, but they could make that observation long before they could identify vitamins and minerals, or like similes, long before they could discover or observe a bacteria or a germ, that he could figure out that there's something here. And so, you know, over time, we've refined our techniques, and so now we get down to the place where we can actually observe germs and viruses, and we've got microscopes, and we've got science working for us, and now we can understand these things a little bit better. But the thing that always amazes me is, why is it that medical science, which discovers these things like Semmelweis and washing hands, fights against these discoveries? I mean, they put their own members. I mean, they're not putting, you know, it isn't the medical doctor putting the chiropractor in prison because he's a competitor. They're putting their fellow medical doctors in prison because they're competitors. Isn't that kind of bizarre? It's kind of like lawyers, you know, putting other lawyers in prison and prosecuting them, you know, because of their success rate, you know, at defending their clients or something. So anyway, the story that I wanted to tell you here today was this Dr. Schultz. And so let me tell you what causes disease, and then I'll show you why I think that's the case. Now, you ready for this? Get your pen and paper out here. Sharpen your pencil here on both ends and write this down. Here's the cause of all disease. Well, not quite all. Schultz says 80%. But there's some other guys over here, and they've got some numbers down here too. And they think that it's the cause of all disease. Schultz goes 80%. And there's another guy over here. Let's see if I got his book here in front of me. It's Dr. Norman W. Walker. He's a doctor of science and a PhD, so he's a doctor. And then here's tissue cleansing through bowel management, Dr. Bernard Jensen, D.C. He's a chiropractor and a nutritionist. And there's five sciences here involved. There's science, herbalists, naturopaths, chiropractors, nutritionalists, and medical doctors. And these medical doctors, you know, and science is what we hold up as being the first, last, and middle word when it comes to health, you know, and disease. It's science. But there's some other guys over here called herbalists, naturopaths, nutritionists, and chiropractors, and they claim that they know a little something about health also, and that they would like to get a cut of the pie, and they're seen as competitors, and they're pretty effective competitors too. And I think that's why the science and the medical doctors are so afraid of herbalists and naturopaths, nutritionists, and chiropractors, is because the natural healing arts are so effective. God, there ain't nothing like a success. Well, anyway, you got your pencil out now. You ready to get constipation? That's what causes disease. Constipation. You are full of SH. I've been told that more than once. And that's not really quite true. And that's because I do these bowel cleansing programs every so often. And there's a number of ways to accomplish this clean bowel syndrome over here. And I wanted to tell you about a couple, three, I'll probably tell you about two or three of them here. But I'm going to zero in on the guy that I think has really got his finger on the pulse here. Of the problem. A real plain talking guy. Real plain. His name is Schulze. S-C-H-U-L-Z-E. And he's an herbalist. And I'm not sure that he's opposed to chiropractors, nutritionists, naturopaths, or other herbalists. In fact, what I notice about these alternative or these natural healing arts is they don't seem to be opposed to anybody. They don't have bad words, you know, about other people over here. They do have some caustic words about medicine, but mainly it's the monopoly that they're concerned with. And they give credit where credit is due. You know, the medical science, you know, has done wonders. They have discovered and uncovered and revealed gigantic amounts of knowledge when it comes to science. And I don't think anybody would deny that. But then when they do that, they want to profit from it. And in order to make a profit, for instance, it was medical science. It was allopathic medical doctors that discovered how to unclog or unplug your arteries back in 1964. And they call it chelation. You can, I don't know what's in the stuff, but they put an intravenous solution into your arteries. They just stick it right into your elbow here, you know where your elbow is? On the inside of your elbow. There's a vein there and they just stick it in there. And about, no, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 of those treatments, do it once a week. And it will clear all of the plaque out of your arteries. Did you know that? Have you ever heard of that? You people that have had bypass surgery out there, you know, spent $100,000 and had veins and arteries cut out of your legs and spliced in to your chest and they cut you open. And they did that because your arteries were clogged up. Now, of course, you didn't know why your arteries were plugged up, and you probably still don't to this day. And you've never been cured of your atherosclerosis because you're still eating the same stuff that caused that clogging of your arteries to start with. And then after you have this bypass surgery, you're only expected to live for 5 years. Or you got to have another bypass surgery. So, and it costs $100,000. Now the chelation, I did it here a few years back. I think it was under $1,000. I think it was $800. It was about $50 a treatment, as I recall. And I think I was in there, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks, something like that. Just clean them right out. You can do it orally, or you can do it intravenously. And it was discovered by medical science. And I thought, God, what a marvelous discovery. Now, there are a few chelation therapy clinics in operation in the United States, just in major cities like Kansas City. There's one up there. There's one here in Springfield, Missouri. And just major cities have them. And they're discouraged. And the guys that are in it are pariahs in the medical profession. But, you know, since medical science discovered it, there wasn't much they could do about it. But, God, they hate it. And they talk against it. And they're trying to abolish it. I don't know why. I was in there, I wasn't all that bad, but they had a guy in there who was plugged up about 85%. In fact, they told him he was going to die very shortly. And so he opted for the chelation rather than bypass surgery, and he was going at the same time I was. And he'd been through about, I don't know, 10 or 15. He was so plugged up, he had to have a lot more than I did. But he was getting better and better and stronger, and it was just melting the plaque out of his body. And he was just happy as a clam at high tide. They didn't have to go through that bypass surgery. So I just thought I'd pass that on to you for what it's worth, you know. But there's a cause. Why did this guy's veins plug up? Something caused that. And when you get cancer, there's some cause for that. Now, the same medical scientists, they say, well, we don't know what causes cancer, and we don't know how to cure it, but we got a treatment. Now, the truth of the matter is, the medical science cures, well, what they call a cure, cancer, in 37% of their cases. And that is, if you don't die, if you go to a medical doctor, submit to cut, burn, and poison, and you don't die for 5 years, that's called a cure. Now, if you die after 5 years, well, then that's too bad. You were cured once, and then you relapsed. Hey, let me give you a reminder here while we're talking about disease here, that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School, or the Law Hour website, is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about the cause of disease. Now, the very first thing that Dr. Schultz puts on page 3 of his book is a warning. And it says, this book is published under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, which grants the right to discuss openly and freely all matters of public concern and to express viewpoints, no matter how controversial or unaccepted they may be. However, medical groups and pharmaceutical companies have finally infiltrated and violated our sacred constitution. Therefore, we are forced to give you the following warning. So, here again, the medical profession and the pharmaceutical industry, they're very jealous of their monopoly in medicine. And so we have to give you this warning. Now, listen to the warning that herbalists, naturopaths, nutritionists, and chiropractors have to give you. We got to tell you this. So listen up. If you are ill or have been diagnosed with any disease, please consult a medical doctor. You've got to go to your medical doctor, your guardian, to get permission to read this book before attempting any natural healing program. Before you go to anybody else, you go to your medical doctor first. Kind of reminds me of my granny. She told me one time, she said, "I'm under doctor's orders." You got that? My granny was under doctor's orders. That kind of sounds like the army. I'm under orders. I've got to do this, whether it makes sense or not. Well, anyway, it says here, many foods, herbs, or other natural substances can occasionally have dangerous allergic reactions or side effects in some people. People have even died from allergic reactions to peanuts and strawberries. Well, that's true. So if you went to an herbalist and he suggested you take these herbs, well, you could die. Any one of the programs in this book could be potentially dangerous, even lethal, especially if you're seriously ill. Therefore, any natural method you learn about in this book may cause harm instead of the benefit that you seek. So ask your doctor first. I'm going to underline that. Ask your doctor. Ask your guardian first. My God, don't think for yourself. Don't ever attempt under any circumstances to treat your own body in the way that you think it ought to be treated. Don't you do that. Don't you think for yourself. God help you if you do. That's the warning. You got to have that. Comes right from the American Medical Association. But remember that the vast majority of doctors have no education in natural healing or natural healing methods and herbal medicine. And they will probably discourage you from trying any of these programs. God. Okay, so I just wanted to illustrate the fact that the medical monopoly is like witch doctors in the Ituri rainforest of the Belgian Congo. You remember when Bwana Jim, you know, would be walking around through the jungle? And then here's this sick guy, see? And the witch doctor is working on this guy and making him worse, see? And so here comes Bwana Jim, and he's gonna save this guy. And so he brings the medical doctor, always white, of course, a white medical doctor comes along. And he saves this guy by shooting him up with snake venom and monkey pus and puts down the witch jock doctor over here, see? That's what we have here in America. We got a system of witch doctors and it's a religion. And then the hospital is the temple. And the doctor is a priest. And he does his ministerial duties here in the temple, you know, operating and cutting your colon out and sticking a bag on your side, you know, things like that. Saving people. Well, Dr. Schultz here has a foreword. Now that we've gotten the medical warning behind us over here, my God, go to your medical doctor guardian before you take any action on your own. Now, normally, when people come to one of these natural healers over here, the medical doctor has written them off and said, well, that's all we can do. You're going to die, so get your affairs in order. And so now they come to Dr. Schultz. They don't come to him first. No. People will go through the cut, burn, poison routine. I mentioned this to you the other day. Once your immune system is impaired by these drugs, you know, like the chemotherapy, well, you know, the natural healing process relies upon your immune system. And so, for you ladies, they cut off your breasts and they cut out your lymph system. Well, your lymph system is part of your immune system, you know. Most of you people have your tonsils and adenoids and your appendix cut out, and then your gallbladder. And, you know, by the time they've cut out half your immune system, you know, over here, well, then there's not much hope for you. And that's just where reality's at. So thought I'd point that out to you. Now, Dr. Schultz, he starts off, and he's an herbalist. This guy studied under Dr. Christopher. This is what caught my attention. I saw some tapes. I heard some tapes, actually audio tapes, about this guy Schultz, who had studied under Dr. Christopher, who died back in the early 80s. He was a Mormon doctor out in Salt Lake City. An herbalist. Not a doctor, but an herbalist. Now, these herbs are pretty important. These herbs are like this B17 I told you about the other day, see? This B17 is a natural occurring food. It's a vitamin, and you'll find it in nuts, generally. And the people that eat these nuts, like the Hunza people, eat the kernels out of the apricot pits. They don't have any cancer over there. Never heard of it. Don't know what it's like. And they're getting extreme doses of this vitamin B17, and so they don't get cancer. And so that was kind of an important discovery. Now when these people leave their Hunza environment, then they go to Nepal or they go to India or someplace, and they start eating normal natural foods like the rest of us, then they get cancer like the rest of us. And so a question arises, well, what is it about this modern diet that we're eating, you know, Krispy Kremes and Hershey bars, that is causing us to come down with cancer? Now, you've all heard that white refined flour and white refined sugar is bad for you. But nobody told you why it's bad for you. That's the kicker. And this Dr. Schultz and this Dr. Walker and Dr. Another guy in here, Bernard Jensen, they can all tell you why. And all of them are in agreement. It's constipation. You're plugged up. Your exhaust system is plugged up. In an automobile, if you want to have some fun, take a potato, just an ordinary potato, and stick it up somebody's tailpipe in their car. Sure. Just stick it up their tailpipe and then watch what happens. It won't wreck their car, but it won't run either. You see, the exhaust gases that come out of the engine have to get out. You got to get rid of them because they're burned up. All of their energy is gone. G-O-N, it's gone. And when you stick a potato up the tailpipe over there, it plugs up the exhaust system. So the engine won't run. Well, not until you take the potato out. You got to get the potato out of the tailpipe. And that's quite a little trick, you know, because that potato, you know, is stuck in the tailpipe. You got to cut it out, you know. It's a hell of a mess. So, anyway, that's what happens to the human body. When it gets plugged up, it gets constipated. So if you're constipated, you're plugged up, and it causes a whole host and plethora of diseases. And so these nature doctors, they took a look at that, kind of like the Semmelweis did, and they're looking at people, and they say, well, what would happen if we cleaned out your colon? I mean, instead of cutting it out and throwing it away, because evidently God thought that you probably needed it. Medical doctors, see, they look at your colon and say, you don't need your colon. We can just cut it out and stick a bag on your side. And they're right again. You can live without your colon. You know, you could take an automobile and bust out the headlights. You don't need headlights to drive your car. Hell, you could take the hood off and the trunk lid off. You could take the back seat out and throw it away. Hell, you could probably take the front seat out and throw it away and put a lawn chair in there, I guess, you know. But your automobile has all of these parts on it because they add to the quality of driving. I mean, you know, if you knock out your headlights, you can't drive at night. That doesn't mean you can't drive in the daylight hours. You don't need your headlights to drive in the daylight hours, but, you know, then when the sun goes down and you want to drive at night, you don't have any headlights. That's pretty tricky. And so the manufacturer put these headlights onto your automobile so that you could drive at night. And so these naturopaths and these nature doctors over here, they figured that God put your colon in there, not because you couldn't live without it, but because it just makes life so much easier and simpler and better with it. And so the nature doctors, they're opposed to cutting out your gallbladder, appendix. You know, the medical doctor looks at your appendix and says, I can't see any reason for an appendix. We can cut them off and people live without them. So therefore, it must be vestigial and it is needed, and so we'll just cut it out. And they typically are taught and they believe in evolution. Whereas the nature doctors, they believe in God. And they constantly refer to it. You know, these nature doctors, they talk about the God and how he made the appendix and how it's a very, very valuable organ. In fact, Dr. Schultz has a chapter in here on your appendix and how important it is and what it does. Medical doctors, they don't know what it does. And they routinely cut them out all the time. And so the naturopath, he says, we don't want to cut that out. What we want to do is heal it. We want to cure it. And if there's something wrong with it, there's something that caused it, and we want to get to the cause. And so that's the fundamental difference between allopathic medicine and naturopathic medicine, or natural healing, is we want to learn what caused this problem and eliminate the cause. Medical doctors aren't concerned about what causes the problem. We want to treat the effect. So medical doctors want to cut tumors out, and naturopathic doctors want to leave the tumor intact and shrink it with vitamin B17. They want to kill it and eliminate it, but they want to do it with vitamins instead of with a knife or with a chemical. And so both work. I mean, you can kill the tumor with a harsh chemical, and it works 37% of the time. 63% of the time it fails and you die. Or you can do it with B17, and it doesn't quite work 100% of the time. And so that's the purpose of this week's analysis. Why not? Because I reported to you that if you've got cancer, you've got a B17 deficiency. If you've got scurvy, you got a vitamin C deficiency. If you've got pellagra, you got a vitamin deficiency. If you've got goiter, you got an iodine deficiency. Okay, so now we've got these deficiency diseases. We can identify those. Cancer is a deficiency disease. We can identify that. But sometimes when you give somebody B17, they die anyway. And so now the question is, well, why did they die? Well, Huldah Clark made another observation, just like Ignaz Semmelweis made an observation concerning washing your hands. He looks over here at the midwives and their patients, their babies and their mothers, they don't die as often of this disease, but they die sometimes with the disease. It's more prevalent among the medical doctors, but it isn't unheard of among the midwives either. So a question arises, well, why are these women dying over here in this ward with the midwives? How come they don't have zero mortality? Was it because they don't wash their hands? Well, they didn't touch any dead bodies. So there's this little minority over here that dies anyway. And so there was a lady by the name of Huldah Clark, and she wrote a book on cancer. She's a doctor. And she came up with this observation. I don't know if it's a conclusion or not, but an observation. She said she had never seen a case of cancer in a person that didn't have intestinal parasites. She said, every single time that I see a cancer case, These people with cancer, every single time they have intestinal parasites. Well, then we'd ask, well, do these intestinal parasites cause cancer? And the answer is, yes, they do. But there's another question comes up. There are lots of people that have intestinal parasites and they don't get cancer. So we look at that and we say, well, how do you explain that? Can you explain that? And, you know, a lot of people just can't explain it. You know, that's the bottom line. And so I took a look at that and I said, yeah, that's quite a little mystery, isn't it? Then there's a doctor back in 1909, I've forgotten his name now, it's not really important, I guess, but he said he had never seen a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. I thought, well, now that's a hell of a story. Does that mean that cancer is caused by vaccination and no other cause? No, just because he hadn't seen any cancer cases that in somebody that's unvaccinated doesn't mean that if you don't have vaccinations, you'll never get cancer. Because later on we've discovered, yeah, there are people that, but it's less common. Why is that? Why is it that you people out there that have vaccinations, of which now, you know, you got 35 vaccinations for your kid up till age 5, and you're wondering why he's got autism or something else, you know? Modern man over the past 100 years has quite an incidence of cancer. It's an incidence that's pretty significant. For instance, in 1900, it was 1 in 33. Today, it's 1 in 2, headed to 1 in 1. And this Dr. Schultz points out that diverticulosis, that is a disease of your bowel, of your colon, which, you know, in 1900 affected 15% of people. So they do an autopsy on somebody back in 1900. And about 15% of the people they're looking at say, well, look at this guy, he's got colon disease. And then by 1920, it was about 20 or 25%. And then by 1970, you know, it was 60-70% and so on. And now it's 100%. 100%. Every single person in America is going to have colon disease. Okay, now you take a look at cancer has been increasing at the same rate as colon disease is increasing. You know, they tell us by 2020 we'll have 100% cancer. Everybody will have cancer at least once in his lifetime by the year 2020. I mean, hell, boys and girls, that's only 11, 12 years away, you know. All right. Now, is there an answer to this? Is there a least common denominator that we can follow through from 1900 to 2000, 2020, and figure out what's causing this disease? And the answer is yes, we can. And here's what it is. Let me tell you again. Get your pencil out. Sharpen it on both ends. Here's what it is. It's constipation. You're plugged up. Your exhaust system is plugged up. And it's an open system. It's got a mouth up on top of your body, right out of your face, you know, right in your head. There's a mouth. And everything that goes into your body, well, everything that's supposed to go into your body, goes into your mouth. The food that you eat, the water that you drink, the Coca-Cola that you drink, you know. The Hershey bar, the Krispy Kremes, it all goes in your mouth. And it runs down into your stomach and through all these little pipes, and we call it your gut, you know. And they got fancy names, they call them intestines and pyloric valves, and you know, there's all this stuff going. But it's about, I don't know, 25, 30 feet long. And finally comes out your anus. You know, that's your rectum. And so, all this food and beverage goes through here, and your gut, your colon, your intestines, you know, your stomach, it secretes juices, and it extracts nutrients out of your food, or the lack thereof. You know, I mean, Krispy Kreme doesn't have a whole hell of a lot of vitamin C in it. Although tomatoes and peppers do. So, you know, if you're eating a lot of Krispy Kremes and McDonald's burgers, you're probably not getting, you're probably not getting near as much vitamin C and vitamin D and vitamin B17 and so on as you could through, say, peach pits and one thing or another. But, all right, that's another story for another day. But there's this nutrition that you're getting out of here, and then that nourishes all your cells out here in your body. And if your body is lacking in vitamin C, you develop a symptom, and we call it scurvy. Or but there's more than one symptom that you can get from vitamin C deficiency. Scurvy is just one that's pretty damn obvious. But there's other symptoms you can get. And so as you read through some of these, and as we progress along here, I'll pick out one or two, and I'll show you what happens to you when you have these nutritional deficiencies. There's another thing here called toxins, though. Remember Hulda Clark? All right. Now, these parasites that are in your gut, these intestinal worms, they can be tapeworms, they can be pinworms. I don't know how many different kinds of worms there are, but there's you know, many, many different types, 50 maybe. And these worms are eating your food. And when they eat, they have to go potty too. And when these worms go potty, they excrete toxins, poisons. And these toxins and poisons cause disease symptoms in your body. So you go to the doctor and you've got these symptoms, and it's probably caused by worms. And so here the naturopath comes along, and he says, if we could clean out your colon, if we could clean out your exhaust system and get rid of those parasites, if we could clean out your colon so that you're not constipated, instead of going to the bathroom once a week, maybe you could go to the bathroom once a day. I know it's a wild new concept for many people. You know, now normal people go to the bathroom about once a week. You know, if you're normal, you about once a week. And that means that you're constipated, and that means that you're going to die from some kind of a disease because your colon is plugged up. That's what that means. And so you're going to have all kinds of symptoms. And constipation is a symptom, but the constipation causes a lot of other symptoms. And it causes a whole host and plethora of disease in your body, including cancer, heart attack, Alzheimer's disease, and others. And Dr. Schultz, now there's three of these doctors now, Dr. Schultz, Dr. Walker, and Dr. Jensen, are all in agreement. They all wrote books on the colon, by the way. So I've got three colon books right here in front of me. And that I'm going to read from as we progress along here. And I'm going to show you that what your problem is, the root cause of your problem. All disease, and Schultz says 80%, the other two says all of it, comes from your colon being plugged up. Constipation. And that you can eliminate disease if you just open up your colon and keep yourself regular. Now, all three of these guys are vegetarians. Vegetarians. And so I took a look at that and I said, well, how does that square with the Bible? Because God, you know, the God that designed your colon and your gut and designed your body, He designed it for meat. Can you believe that? Yeah, I'm going to show you that. He designed it for meat, but not all kinds of meat. Just some kinds. Not all kinds, just some kinds. So we'll cover that next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review when we get into dissecting and finding out the cause of disease. Where does it come from? And the Bible, believe it or not, will tell us. Along with a couple other guys here. Hey, I'm out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. www.thelawhour.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.